Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. I don't know why I do that. I haven't been to the circus in like 30 years. But anyway, man, that's too long. This is Crash with you here on Crash Palace's production of the Last Knock Horror Podcast. Johnny Numb is out chasing his cat. He recently relocated within the Harrisburg area, so his kitty, I'm sure, is exploring new lands, and Johnny's on the run. So I'm here tonight with a very special guest, a wonderful human being who's been on the show before. You've heard him. He's a successful horror writer. In fact, he's not just a writer. He is a novelist, and he is currently working on a new book that he'll tell us about in a second. And you're going to find out about his other ones, and we're going to talk about horror and all that good stuff and what works inside his brain. And that is Thomas That's Thomas S. Flowers. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Pleasure. A pleasure as always. So so the workings of your brain, huh? You don't want to go there.
Here we go. I have lots of cobwebs and gears turning, that's for sure.
Well, cobwebs fit the bill with the horror element. Tell us about the horror books that you write. What's going on?
Oh, yeah. So my focus for genre is horror, and obviously we're here talking about it. Mm-hmm. I kind of jump all over the place as far as subgenres. I've tackled, vampire stories mm-hmm. with The Last Hellfighter, which yep. surprisingly is my most successful book. I guess people really dig vampires.
I do.
It was fun. It was like a historic, right? So it was a slash between historic fiction and with a dash of vampirism in there.
Excellent.
I also like to dab a little bit in zombies. I know it's super, like everyone's got a zombie story to tell, and it's a fun subgenre to write because it's really about, like George Romero said, it can be about any kind of calamity. Your stories are really about the people who are trying to survive, and right. So it becomes more and more of a human story than anything else.
Yeah.
And then of course, I'm recently this year I dabbled more into paranormal with the release of Palace of Ghosts.
Hmm. Are you? Do you come from a haunted home?
with that one, I wanted to explore the idea that a veteran, like a combat veteran, mm-hmm. is this haunted house. It's like this alien being who was somebody before he went to war, and then became somebody else returning to war. And so I try to explore that idea through the telling of a haunted house story.
Got you. And you are a combat veteran, correct?
Yes, sir. I served in the Army for almost 7 years, about six and a half, with those three tours to Iraq, serving in Tikrit and then Baghdad.
Yeah. Jeez. Oh, well, thank you for your service and for coming home.
It was my honor.
Oh, man. You're too kind. And you have a beautiful family and... it seems like lately, because we're friends on Facebook, which is wonderful. I'm so happy for that. Your daughter, she's getting into horror movies, it seems. Am I correct? Or,
well, I'll try to gauge, age appropriate for her. But yeah, she loves to draw like vampires. And, for a while, she was really into like Scooby Doo, and then they kind of changed. They changed the design and outlook of it. But there for a while, this cast of Scooby-Doo was almost H.P. Lovecraft-centric stories. So I thought it was kind of interesting.
Wow. Those meddling Cthulhus. I mean,
pretty much. Damn. It only ran for like three or four seasons, I think. But it was pretty fun.
Man. And how about your wife, man?
She is a full-time student now, so... Now that her daughter is, she's getting up, older, she's not at home all the time. She's at school. So my wife went back to school, and she's going to work on her master's in history.
Nice.
She can go out in the world and teach the next generation.
Yeah, no, I have my BA in history. I have a love for it, very much so. But is she a horror fan as well?
Oh, no. She won't read anything I write. She don't watch any of my movies. If something comes out in the theaters and none of my friends can go, I'm gonna be flying solo.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. Oh, man. That's wild. So where does your love for horror come from? I mean.
It's hard to pinpoint the exact time where, where the interest is there, but I do have a memory and I cherish it because I love my family. But when growing up, it was just me and my sister. She's 5 years older than I am. And together we had like Friday movie nights until we got so old that we hated each other and hung out with our own friends and then became friends again. But you know how that works. So every Friday we had a Friday night movie night. And one night she rented on VHS from Blockbuster a copy of Night of the Living Dead. It was the 90s Savini remake with Romero writing it, though. So I'm not sure if it really counts as a true remake, but it was, I watched that and it just captivated me. I remember from that point being really interested in Romero-based, zombie stories, the rules of Romeroism, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, that's good. Sure.
And yeah, having a little interest in horror, and then of course, I remember, of course, later on that same decade, Jason Goes to Hell came out, and that was a huge ordeal. I still love that movie, even though a lot of people hate it because it had nothing to do with, they felt it had, it was body jumping. It was more of a creature flick than it was a slasher, but it was still fun.
That's all that matters. I mean, yeah, it's funny what horror does. It's so, like, right from the beginning of the conversation, you talk about the subgenres of horror, and they're so multifaceted. There's so many, it's almost endless. Horror can be anything. So what do you bring to your books, to your stories that maybe we're not seeing on screen, or is there something you're trying to explore thematically, or what is it?
Yeah, without getting
Without
too
giving
much
anything
on it.
away, yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of my characters. You'll find a lot of veteran characters, and I love like the groups like Words of War kind of groups, and then the veteran writings and poets that came out of the Great War, the War to End All Wars. Being able to, because the percentage is so low of actual veterans, and then taking into account how many of those veterans are actual writers or have the capacity to write, not that I actually consider myself the capacity to write, but
Oh God.
at least I could give that perspective, to my stories, So, I love exploring those kind of concepts of the fragmentation of what war does to the emotional aspect in the mind and the heart.
Gotcha. Does writing horror? I mean, you had, three tours in Iraq. I can't imagine what you witnessed, what you went through. Does it help in any way with coping with I don't, I don't.
I think the writing aspect definitely helps with the coping, being able to dig up and explore memories that you may be too timid or too afraid to talk to anybody else about, but you can put them in a fictional story because people think you're telling lies. That's what, Stephen King called fictional writing. But you can actually interject a lot of yourself in there without having to be worried about being judged, or that fear or stigma of PTSD and stuff. Now, as far as horror, I've always loved horror, ever since a kid. I do find, I mean, it's just a way to unplug, right? It's a way to explore another story, just overall entertaining.
Oh, yeah. I love it. It's funny how I could get lost in a horror movie and well, I mean, some of them, you check your brain at the door and you just enjoy the slashing and the ride and everything else. And others, it's like, oh man, I got to work for this one. I got to
Oh
think.
yeah, no.
I love those too. But who are some of your favorite horror authors?
Well, not to be cliche, but I think everyone likes to single out King as one of their favorites. Clive Barker, of course, another one. Fantastic teller of short stories for sure. I've been dabbling a little bit more into H.P. Lovecraft this year. As well as Alan Moore, graphic novels,
Oh yeah.
especially around the Hellblazer series. I've been reading a lot of that this year, and those can be kind of brutal, and then
Yes.
a lot of cool different stories to explore about, the impact of environmentalism and the home life and government and stuff. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and eco horror is a big thing as well. In fact, I have a review going up next. Not this. Oh, forget it. Whenever this airs, I have one going up for Flora. I don't know if you've seen that, the independent Canadian horror film Flora, which is I thought I was really impressed by it. What do
No, I
you?
haven't seen that one.
Now, yeah, a lot of people haven't. That's why I'm writing a review. Hey, you need to see this thing, man. You know, one of those deals.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell us you said your what's your latest book that's out right now that you could tell people about?
The one that just released, I think earlier this month or last month, is City of the Flesh Eaters. So that's kind of like a second book in a series that is pretty much pulp 1980s zombie horror. So all that good fun stuff that you got,
Nice.
like the nostalgia of the 80s, it's all like infused in there. And City of Flesh Eaters kind of picks up after The Island of the Flesh Eaters, which is the first book,
Right.
as it continues on. And I'm always kind of like Texas, Houston-centric, so I always try to always like infuse my hometown and these stories. So it's predominantly around Galveston and then Houston at large.
That's cool. Well, at least if you're in Galveston, you could run into the ocean and maybe sort of swim away from them a little bit, But no, that's excellent. What kind of because I'm thinking, I think a lot of authors they always say write what you know, and that's always fun to explore, like where you live. What does Texas do? Does it bring a unique perspective to a zombie-based story? Is there something special about Texas that makes it different from some of the other things that we've seen?
I think just the locale itself is just easier to write on because you write what you know, and then what you don't know you research. So in other books that aren't Texas located, it's just a lot of my other stories and books. They're always kind of centered around this area unless exploring somewhere else. But I just think it's fun, kind of like an idea that kind of like with Stephen King, he's always writing about Maine, even towns that don't really exist.
I gotcha. Oh man. And are you a big Fulci fan?
Full quarter.
Fulci, the director.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I was thinking in my head like, what? Oh,
Well, maybe my New
love.
Jersey accent came through and screwed it up. I take full credit for that screw up, but
I love those late 70s and 80s foreign horror zombie picks. And of course, they're like more Armageddon themed stuff, like From Beyond. And it's just
Oh yeah.
it's great dubbed movies.
Yeah. What do you think's missing from zombie based the subgenre has been like it's never like waned, but and it reached its zenith with the Walking Dead series and all of this. And where else do you think it can go, or do you think it's finally going to rot away in the sun, or what do you think?
It'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. I mean, it's been so popular, it feels like, for such a long time, where it really crescended right there in the 80s, and then in the 90s it kind of plateaued a little bit, and then here we go with The Walking Dead, and it just skyrockets, and it's just everywhere now. But I think it just kind of goes back to the idea of why people are watching these things. People who don't typically watch horror, they're really getting into The Walking Dead and zombie stories. I think a lot of this has to do with they don't really care about the actual gross out zombie parts, that most of us really love. I think they really just want to see how people are dealing with this situation, or they want to fantasize about living in a world that, is not, there's no rules. You create your own society, basically.
Yeah, that's true. You get to everything goes to zero. You don't have to worry about credit card debt. You don't have to worry about mortgage payments. It's like, and you're finally allowed to, like, you know, beat the shit out of somebody if you need to. You know, you don't have to, you know, it's like you're, it's like, wow, it's like a freedom that we can't really explore otherwise. So, yeah, I
It's like
could,
a reset, yeah.
yeah, I could see living like vicariously through any character on screen, you know, especially when it, I, you know, Dawn of the Dead, the remake. I remember when Sarah Polley's character got a chance to take somebody out who was an asshole in human form, and she, and it's like, oh, they turned. I get to kill him, you know. And it was like there was like a bit of joy in her heart, you know, when she had to do that.
That movie had like the best opening sequence for any kind of movie, even zombie movies. It was really fun
Yeah,
watching it.
oh
But yeah,
yeah.
zombie stories are just fun to watch. Even to write. So it's kind of hard to tell when it'll actually go away because, you know, we're really just is there any limit to exploring the kinds of societies and the consequences that come from those decisions of survival, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I don't think there really is. You know, I just like to see cool takes here and there, you know, with the films that I watch. I want to see, you know, obviously interesting characters, but like how, you know, all the stories are generally the same though, and it's and which is okay. I mean, the basic premise is zombies rise, humans fight to survive kind of thing. So that's not
Man.
going to go away, and that's fine. It's just what are they going to do about it? And now you're having movies, post zombie apocalypse movies. I saw one and it could have been brilliant and it wasn't. And it was great because it was called The Resort with a Z and it was a zombie resort. You could, we had, they had all these zombies like corralled and it's like you could go on a safari and kill all the zombies you wanted and feel like, you know, yeah, look what I did, you know. And of course, something goes horribly wrong, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that's a great concept. I like that too.
I would like to see one where they take their time. Like they're so eager to shoot their load and the world's ended, you know, that they don't just slow down, you know, watch it progress, you know, and then how that is filmed. Kind of like taking the beginning of the 2004 remake of Dawn of the Dead, where you see normal civilization. And you could see some Easter egg hints of, you know, oh, well, something's going on, and we know what's going on, but they don't know what's going on, kind of thing. And then, bam, you know, the credits are over, and the world's pretty much ended. You know, now they're just trying to survive, and they're just like, man, I mean, come on, let's try to reserve. You know, I would like them to reserve a little bit and try to slowly ease into there. You know, George Romero's original '78 took its time as well.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
And then until it got to the mall, and then we're just kind of isolated in that story. But I would like to see one that explores, you know, society as it's happening. The first couple episodes of Fear of the Walking Dead were like that, and I thought it was really cool. And then it just kind of curtailed into another Walking Dead storyline. But
Yeah, it did. You know, Fear the Walking Dead, the beginning, it was it was starting to tick me off because it was taking too long. And it's like if you can't catch on to your neighbor looking like totally bizarro and not responding to language and going rah, like, hey, are you okay? Are you sick? It's like, dude, what are you, stupid? It's like, come on, man. Take action, damn it. Oh, that stuff, that I hate when like when there's like no realization, like
Yeah.
it's like what, you know, what planet are people on? I mean, you could take a look at a friend walking in the door and you'll tell if they're healthy or not right away, and you'll be like, "Hey, man, what's wrong?" And you're
Oh,
like, you know,
man, you're missing half your face. You need to
yeah,
go to the store? Do you need a
exactly.
doctor?
I know. I hate that. I hate it. Oh
You
man.
know what show is really good at it? It doesn't tease. You know, you get the good action scenes, but you get a nice, evenly paced infection rate, and that's The Strain.
I knew you were going to say that.
The first season, man, love that show. I just finished it finally, and it's like the saddest ending ever. But at least for that first season, it was just great pacing and just showed like these roadblocks that we put up for ourselves and how we're pretty much our own worst enemies, you know, like when it comes
Always.
to these kind of, yeah, always, right? Oh, it's a fantastic show.
Oh, that's excellent. I didn't write it, but I want to see it. I want to see, like, and this equates to what we're talking about in regard to, zombie-based subgenre. A slasher film where the characters do everything right to stay alive, but they still don't make it. That's what I want to see. And I'd like to see that with a zombie film too,
Very nihilistic. Yeah, that's kind of how they are, or at least the really good ones, where you get one or two survivors in a group of like 10, and it's just, well, what was the point, and then they kind of flash to these crude, 1960s pictures of civil rights, violence and stuff like that, and the power of Night of Living Dead, of course.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Night of the Living Dead, something special. That was, Romero did something amazing, and well, look what it did for him. I mean,
Oh, absolutely.
oh man. And they were doing, I mean, they had, that was a, I forgot what was like $100,000 investment for them. And back then that was like a million plus or something. And, they put everything into it and they made it work. And now he has his star on Hollywood Boulevard, right? Is that fine?
Yeah, I think that did happen,
Finally. Long, long overdue. And it's great because it's like, hey, I wasn't in Hollywood yet. I did it, And, oh, that's
Yeah,
awesome.
like his he because he always based his stuff in Pittsburgh,
Oh, I love
Pittsburgh centric.
the crazies. The crazies is my favorite. That was my favorite of
That
his.
one was good, and then the remake to it wasn't too bad either.
No,
They
it
kind of
wasn't.
just upped the volume a little bit.
They did a little bit more than they could, but there was this element of realism to the crazies with the commanding officer, like, how the hell are we going to do this? And it wasn't, which was great because it wasn't this whole, all right, we're the military, we're here, and like people talking like robots and all of that crap, which isn't genuine at all. And so, yeah, I love that a lot. But,
Yeah, the scientist in that one was the scientist in the Dawn of the Dead 78 original, and the people who are crazy were, they weren't rage monsters like 28 Days Later. They were, they were literally like crazies. They start talking, and you get this eerie feeling of, man, this person is not right in the head.
Yeah, that was the cool, creepy part of it. It's like, are they losing their mind? And it was really good because you would second guess. It's like, well, let's see, we've been through hell. We haven't slept in a long time. Maybe it's that, And it was great. There was a lot of guessing going on, and oh, and Lynn Lowry, man, oh my God, she was awesome in that. The way she died, I think Romero didn't want her to die the way she did, and but the way she did it was perfect, and he was like, all right, we're gonna keep it. So
Nice.
yeah, her death scene was great. But so tell us about some of your characters and in your latest book that's out there right now. Is that Officer Mendez, I believe?
Yeah, he's like a new character that I brought on just to kind of continue it. I kind of teased about bringing some of the characters in the original to see where they're at in the city, but I decided to kind of just keep it in the series. It's the same universe, but it's going to be a totally different set of characters. So yeah, there's Officer Mendez. I wanted to give like a police perspective of what it would be like on Galveston Island, where, where this, because I get kind of gave a nod to the movie Zombie on how that kind of started with, this injured or dead person, in air quotes, dead person going to the morgue and it kind of kicking off from there. So I try to show a nice slow start from the morgue, and then it just hour by hour, it just kind of builds and builds and builds, and until Galveston's pretty much a riot. And then it starts pouring out and infecting the surrounding area, which would have been, Clear Lake City or Webster, Texas, those kind of eastern south parts of Houston. So it kind of goes back and forth between him and another character called Chris King. And so his is actually a nod to a group of high school buddies. We wanted to make a graphic novel based on our friend Chris King, and he's very Chris is off. He's a good guy. He's very monotone though, and very robotic Ben Stiller kind of voice,
Gotcha,
And so
gotcha.
it was kind of like a running joke. We're gonna have him as the hero, as like an Ash kind of character, and in a zombie graphic novel. But it never came, you know, it never actually bloomed or anything like that. So I just took that childhood memory of, yeah, I'm gonna write Chris King, but you know what? I'm gonna put him in Blockbuster Video, and he's gonna have to like make a decision with his life if he's gonna step up and become a leader and help these survivors, you know, survive the city, or you know, is he just gonna look out for himself? So I kind of put it into like Night of the Living Dead and a Blockbuster Video store in 1980s.
I love it, man. I love it. Oh, that's cool. Oh, man. Yeah, because it takes place in 85, correct?
Yeah, correct. So he's there, and I used to work at Blockbuster Video
Oh, man.
before there was DVDs, VHS tapes. So
Wow. Do you.
and there are customers with clerk kind of questions like, do you have that movie with that guy and he's in that thing? Like, yeah. I think you're thinking of Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's aisle two, action section.
Oh man. Do you have a big VHS collection still or what?
No, I used to.
Oh.
I think my parents did save. I have to go up to Virginia to get it though. Oh, what was the name of it? It was like Cemetery. No, Let Sleeping Corpses Lie. That's the one they
Oh
have saved for me.
man. Oh.
Yep. And I found a when HBO was, I guess, putting together VHS tapes before they made their own channel,
Right.
they did a production or a, you know, I guess a copy of The Evil Dead. And I have a copy of
Oh.
that one too.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
I
Oh.
found that at Goodwill. It's crazy.
Damn. Wow.
I was like, I'm buying this. I have no way of watching it, but I'm buying it.
Yeah, I think I have one box of VHS tapes left and it's old movies I can't get on DVD, but I also don't have a VHS player, so it's like
Yeah, it's like, oh man. But you know, now we're kind of looking back, right? We miss that grainy, crappy, screen shots of these horror movies. You know, it's like the digital age and the clear cut crisp CGI has kind of ruined that gritty, gnarly feel of watching a horror movie.
Well, it's funny that you say that because you automatically reminded me of Star Trek that I was watching the original series and I was seeing it in like high def and all. And I was noticing because everything's changed and they could get more in depth. I was like, wow, the makeup artist did Spock's makeup a little bit yellow, but she didn't go low enough on his chest and you could see like the real flesh. And I'm like, oh, and that never, no one ever saw that before because it wasn't crystal clear. So now everybody has to step up their game when it's like, what are we filming on? What's the aspect ratio? What's the depth of field? Okay. And it's funny because you have to find actually, when I do film, I have to, make sure I have a makeup artist who knows what they're doing. It's like, this is the lighting we're using. Here's the filters. Okay, I know exactly what to do. And so people don't look pasty or weird or whatever. And
Oh,
but
well,
you're right though, with the older stuff, it's like once it's amped up and like as pure as can be and it's shown on screen, it could look a little weird. So
yeah.
that's
Absolutely.
funny. Damn, man.
Wonder if we'll see anything weird when in October, Alien, the anniversary edition, comes out to theaters again.
And you know what? Alien is my favorite movie, and I have to, I've never seen it on a big screen.
Neither have I. I'm hoping to get tickets for
Yeah, I have to. I'll probably have to go to New York City for that. But yeah, oh man, that's just that movie, the music, all of it's just
Oh, yeah, it's perfect
oh
storytelling.
man. It really was. It was great. I watch it several times a year. At one point I was watching it once a month and it's like, okay, there's other stuff out there, but now I don't know what to watch anymore because everything seems to be like really bad. So I'm like, I have to go back to every open up the all the Blu-rays and start playing them one by one again. So your new book, what is this about? Where are we headed? Is it a continuation of this story? You're doing something new? What's going on?
For Study the Flesh Eaters or what I'm writing in currently?
The one you're writing currently.
Oh, okay. So, again, I'm every, like about once a year, I try to release one book in an ongoing series called Planet of the Dead. And so when I started it, it was Planet of the Dead. And Last year I had War for the Planet of the Dead, and this year I plan on releasing Escape from the Planet of the Dead.
Nice.
And yeah, it's gonna be those Planet of the Apes kind of themed movie titles.
Nothing wrong with that, man. Nothing wrong with that.
Next year it's gonna be Voyage to the Planet of the Dead.
Nice.
And I'm really excited about. I mean, I'm really excited about the one I'm writing now, but I'm really excited about the one next too, because I'm gonna go ahead and go 100 years into the future, and try to explore what the world looks like after 100 years after the zombie apocalypse. So.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm thinking like some Mad Max scenarios, you know, watching, you know, doing some research and watching some episodes of Life Without People and seeing, you know, the condition of buildings and how things erode and the wildlife that kind of builds up from there.
Oh, man, that's going to be fun research.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that, especially after War of the Planet of the Dead, because I introduced what. Hopefully not a real scenario, because we're talking about fiction, but they launched nuclear weapons in order to try to curb the growing infection rate in U.S. soil. So I'm exploring that kind of like fallout and what that has an effect on. So that's what Escape from the Planet. It's overall the main theme really is about nuclear winter. And people who are trying to survive or surviving these sub-zero temperatures or really, really cold temperatures. And, you know, where can they go to find refuge? Like, where is a safe place, you know? And there's continuing characters that have been in all the stories. But the fun thing about Planet of the Dead is that it's really set up and designed and formatted like a collection of short stories. So,
oh, that's cool.
You'll get character, and if it's just all set in the same universe. So,
right.
You'll get one-off characters, you know, and then sometimes you'll get combined characters from different perspectives sharing the same storyline. I've got one character who's continued on since the beginning. Hers is kind of interesting, a little bit sci-fi. Because I introduced her getting a bionic arm in the second book.
I love it, man.
Just having a little fun with it, and
sure, why
not? I'm exploring that technology used to give that to her is now having an impact on her body. It's changing her, you know, DNA makeup, you know, slowly. And
I hate when that happens.
You know it. And so she's kind of coming to terms with that. Kind of like the point of reference for that is. The character Cable from X-Men, who has this cybernetic disease that just kind of slowly kind of integrates his flesh to technology.
Oh, man. I love it, man. This is excellent.
Yeah, it's a fun book. And it's even more fun to write when you can do shorter stories that you don't have to be so dedicated with throughout the whole thing. You can explore a unique, just random guy who's on a roof as a sniper. Well, what's his story, you know? Or in this book, I'm doing a nod to Day of the Dead. And so in China, because it's Planet of the Dead, so it has to set around the whole planet.
Right.
There's a, you know, Chinese scientific team that's set up in the second book, and it continues in this one, where different scientists are kind of brought to this underground facility in China, off the coast of China, and is on this island, and their sole goal is to either find a way to kill him or find a cure or whatever. And so I'm kind of giving a little nod to Day of the Dead and that whole kind of mania that sets up because they're underground too much and they lost contact with the mainland, and their military protectors are now becoming tyrants, you know?
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
No, it is. It's always fun. Do you, when you're writing, how do you prepare? Do you do an outline? Do you just go for it? What's the whole procedure for you?
Yeah, I just jump right in. I don't really try to create too much of an outline. I don't want to kind of have to box myself in and follow that rule, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I try to flesh out a concept and explore and research as much as I can to make it as real as possible. Of course, the more, you know, historic connected it becomes, the more research you have to do. I did a year's worth of research to write the last Hellfighter.
Damn.
Simply because of who it was based on and the history behind it. And I really wanted to get a true telling, even fictional story, you know, because not a lot of people have heard of the Harlem Hellfighters.
Right.
And they have a really cool history that's surrounded with jazz and African-American rights and veteran rights for that, you know, as far as that goes.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to explore their story in France. And then, of course, have this long arching story of, you know, revenge.
Nice. Oh, that's excellent. So when you're right, you're diving in, you're going full steam ahead. Do your characters lead the way for you? Do you trust them, or do what's the plan? Because I can't imagine. And if you do this, this is amazing. If you could just like, yeah, I just write through it, man. It's awesome. But but like when you get those parts where it's like, oh man, where am I going now? Do you how do you get through it?
Yeah, sometimes there's pauses, you know, where you're really into a character, you're kind of writing and letting them lead the way. And then sometimes you'll hit a roadblock where you want to go one way, you want a certain outcome out of it. But if you're being really honest with the character, and you're listening to him, yeah, they're telling you to go another way. So sometimes you get to that point, you just go, okay, well, I'm gonna take a little break. I'm gonna think about it a little bit,
yeah.
And then we'll come back to it. But most often than not, you know, I will always lead with the way the character is, because if I'm being dishonest with the character, then I feel like that's going to come across when someone reads it, and they're going to go like, no one would really make that choice. And I've read a lot of indie work, and there's a lot of awesome writers out there, but sometimes I've read some books and stories where I'm like, even from like quote unquote professional, you know, agentized, you know, writers, and I'm reading the character and I'm like, there's no fucking way that dude's ever going to fucking do that. You know, like, come on. Now it just blew the whole reality, right?
Yeah.
And now you're just disconnecting from the story, and now it's, you know, like, what's the point of finishing it?
No, I get it. I know what you mean. No, that makes perfect sense. I remember the awful film by M. Night Shyamalan, The Happening. And
oh, God.
Yeah, exactly. And my one friend was super Chris Massinio, who runs the New Jersey Film School. He was so livid, he was so outraged when John Leguizamo's character left his daughter behind to go search for his wife. He was like, "No, because he's my, you know, Chris is a dad. No father would ever abandon his child. This is he was just." He was like ripping his skin off in the street. It was like, Chris, stop. You know, he's just like going crazy. And yeah, I hate stuff like, because, you know, it didn't ring true for me either. I don't have a child, but I'm like, nah, what the hell is he doing? You know, he's like, yeah, I'll be back. I'm going to look for your mom. Like, what? No. You know, it just didn't work. It was so contrived. It was awful.
Yeah, so that's the trick. You know, you really got to listen to your characters in order to make an honest decision for them, you know, even if it's a weird one, you know, you kind of just got to go with it.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've had stories change completely because of where a character was going, and in the end it's all for the better. So at least I hope so.
Yeah. I've had endings completely change as well. And because I usually discuss sometimes with my wife some of the stories, and she actually is the one that came up with the idea of turning Planet of the Dead into more of a short story kind of driven, you know, where there's short stories set in the same planet so that it's more of a planet. Because at the time it was so Texas centric, it was like, you might as well just call, you know, Texas of the Dead, you know, kind of do it that way. I'm like, no, I like Planet of the Dead. It's got a cool title to it, you know, let's go with it. But I've had story ending, like, I wanted a certain ending. I'm like, this is the ending I'm going to want. Because, you know, it's poetic and I'm literary and it's, you know, I can smoke a cigarette and be happy with it, you know? And,
yeah, yeah.
And then I'm like, no, that's not the ending I'm going to get, because the character is going to do something different.
Nice. Well, since we're talking about zombies so much and all, let's just say, like, right now, you know, the zombie virus, it's coming down. We're in a zombie apocalypse. What do you think, from all that you've written and researched, all the movies you've watched, what's the best way for somebody to survive a zombie apocalypse? What's the plan?
Oh, man. Well, that's that's an idea that we're all continuing to explore now. You know, the one place you don't want to be in is an urban environment. I think even, you know, the CDC, when they did that having a fun with the zombie apocalypse and how it would happen kind of scenario.
Right, right, right.
They said, you know, cities are not the place you want to be. So if you're in a city, your survival rate is very, very, very low. Now, as time goes on, you know, those people who are infected in a city start spreading out into the country area. So it's kind of like you want to kind of start out in a non-populated area and kind of go from there. Mm-hmm. A lot of my characters in the book, for some reason, want to look for an island. Like, they think that that's like the catch-all, be-all for some safe haven, you know, just finding a low-populated island where you can kind of set up shop and try to wait this out or start a new life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I remember in Day of the Dead, you know, at the very end of that, you know, she's, you know, the mad scientist, and now in Frankenstein, he's like, where would you go? Where would you go where these things don't exist, you know?
Yeah.
And but they ended up just flying off to some tropical island somewhere fishing. I think the most popular idea I hear, especially here in Texas, is people going to some place like Bass Pro Shop or Walmart, you know. But can you imagine the other people who have the same idea? You know, it's going to be all-out war. It's going to be all-out war.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people getting shot with bow and arrows in their feet, you know, and people just turning into zombies, and then it's all overrun in panic because people don't know how to work together.
No, not when emotion takes over and that fight for survival is, you know, just, man. I remember, there were elements of the movie that I liked, and one of my favorite scenes in the War of the Worlds Spielberg version was when all the people are waiting on his hill, a massive amount of people, and then suddenly, like, the alien spaceship comes, and we're looking at it from a distance, so all the people scream and scurry, and they're all like ants running away, you know, from a major, like, you know, predator, and it's like, yeah, that's pretty much what we are, you know, it's like, you know. And like the zombie thing, you know, like if it happened, which would be just bonkers. I don't know how people would react, but it wouldn't be good. Let's put it that way. It just wouldn't be good.
Yeah. I mean, once certain certainties are no longer, you know, like, in Planet of the Dead, you know, most people are trying to go to clinics, you know, and most people are trying to listen to the radio about where they can go, or people are just completely look out for yourself kind of mentality, you know. It really quickly does break down, you know, and I explored that. I didn't believe it at first. I was like, man, it's got to be a slower progression than that. But not really. I think once certain government ties, you know, people have a mistrust of government as it is, but then you take away the comfortability of certainty, like you turn off the cable or the power, people start freaking out. You know, the internet goes down, and then it's this calamity, you know. So, I think it's going to be a really quick progression. I think the easiest way to survive really is just, depending on where you're at, if you can stay where you're at safely, do that and be quiet, you know, until you're able to, you know, move to lesser ground where there's less of a population. I think it was in The Walking Dead or one of the shows, the way the zombies hunted was by, you know, sight and sound,
right?
Or smell, or, you know, smell, sound, yeah. You know. So yeah, if you can be really quiet, maybe you could ninja around them.
Oh man.
But you know, Barbara in the remake of Night of the Living Dead, she had that really good speech at the end. She's like, man, we can walk right by them.
Yeah.
But the problem wasn't that they could just walk right by them. It was just, they couldn't figure out how to work together, and everyone had their own agenda.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I loved the reimagining of Barbara in that. Tallman played such a great, great role. And it was as soon as, like, you saw her show up, it's like, oh, this isn't – and they even spelled her name differently, too. It wasn't Barbara without the other A. It was Barbara. And it was like, wow. And she was just like, you know, she's got the sling. She's got the shotgun shells. I'm like, is she single? She's awesome.
Yeah, that was a really well done, you know, true to taste. And of course, Romero had a hand in the story writing of it, but Tom Savini really did a real good director on that one.
Oh yeah, he did. He was great. Tony Todd was always as amazing.
Oh yeah, that guy's great.
Yeah, and just And he got to include the scene that Romero couldn't include. Romero, I don't know if he shot it and then withdrew it. But zombies hanging in the trees, and I think at the time before it came out, there had been a lynching in the South, and he was like, "Nope, that's out. That's got to go," you know.
Well, that's
And
surprising because they included so many photographs that they took, but they looked so much reminiscent of some of the violence that happened in the South during that era of the 60s, 50s,
oh, I
60s,
agree. Yes.
with
Yes.
like the hooks, the men with hooks and
Oh,
dogs, and
yeah.
a lot of familiar imagery, which is probably why it resonated so much with audiences,
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if, like, for more of an impact and punch, if he had kept that scene in, but he was like, nah, it's gotta go. I mean, he did that on his own. You know, it wasn't like a studio telling him. I mean, obviously, it was an independent film out of Evan City, but out in PA, but. Out in PA. I'm in PA. What the hell am I talking about? I always think my heart's in New Jersey, so it's hard to like escape that. But no, that's excellent. Man. No, I had an idea and it went away. You know what I was wondering? Did you see the movie? This is gonna sound I'm gonna bring it back to this. Shin Godzilla? Did you see?
No,
No!
I've
Dude, you gotta watch it. It's fantastic. And it's pretty much about the politics of monster killing. And it's like the Japanese government's like, well, what do we do? You know, like just Godzilla. Well, we need approval before, you know, like all. And it was,
Oh,
and it, yeah,
the
and it's,
council meetings,
yeah,
government votes.
I know, and it sounds like, Bill, that's a dull movie, but it wasn't. It was so cool. It was like, and I'm wondering, what about like a zombie apocalypse? And it's like, there's a chance to get the upper hand, but like all these decisions have to be made. You know, because we didn't lose the government and all, and it's like, well, we can't do that, but you know.
It's got a flair. It sounds like a Doctor Strangelove where they government themselves so much, and the way they operate that the nuclear weapon drop before they can turn
Yeah,
it
exactly. Exactly. I was just thinking that'd be pretty wild, but no, did you ever go to a zombie run? I know, you know, they have, you know, Walking Dead, they have their you know, at conventions and all, San Diego Comic-Con, they have like their zombie run, which is which one writer, Corey Brin for Crash Palace, he wrote his story, and to him it was a rite of passage. He wanted to not only survive it, but he wanted to help others as well, and it was actually very heart-wrenching to read his story about how, you know, he took it so seriously, and because we live in a country now where there is no rite of passage, you know, and so I don't know if you went on the zombie run. I know you're lifting weights like a madman. You're going to be in like in the Olympics soon or something. It's
Yeah, trying to get a little healthier. No, I haven't been to any zombie runs. I actually haven't even been to any conventions, which is a shame because they have Fright Fest, here in
yeah.
Dallas or in Dallas, Texas, which is only like a 4 hour drive for me. But my wife actually brought it up this year. She's like, why don't you go to Fright Fest next year? I heard that's really a lot of fun for you horror nerds, and I was like, yeah. I get, for a while there, I just, crowds kind of made me kind of uneasy, and
Sure, of course.
social settings sometimes too. That's probably why us nerds are solitary creatures. But
Right.
I'm getting more comfortable being around, groups of people and stuff like that.
Good.
So. And I know a few local guys here who like to go to Texas Fright Fest. So I think next year for 2020, I'm definitely going to check it out.
That'd be great because, you know, what you said about, you know, horror nerds and such. When you go to a horror convention, I mean, the people are great. The people are really great. Once in a while, you might have a star who's like a jerk, but like, just I've had wonderful conversations standing in line with people I've never met before, and it's just, it's really nice. It's actually very comforting and relaxing. You know, it's like the, you know, the complete antithesis of what I think, you know, people who don't enjoy horror films would might expect. So, I hope you get a chance to go and enjoy it.
Well, I know the online community, it's pretty tight. I mean, people have,
Yep.
what I've seen, drama, arguments, or sometimes disagreements about certain things, like everybody does,
Sure.
but for the most part, I think most people are pretty, you know, pretty close and supportive.
Oh,
So.
absolutely. A horror family, I think, is quite damn strong. So that's a good deal.
Yeah.
And well, we are winding down, so I'm going to ask you my final question, and then we're going to do a couple of other things. But I don't know how much you've been interviewed regarding your writing and your books and all, but what hasn't been asked of you in an interview that something you want to discuss, talk about, answer, inform the world about? What might that be? Because this is
Oh
your
my gosh.
opportunity. Yeah, I know people hate this question. Lloyd Kaufman didn't. He's like, I think he talked for another 40 minutes or something, but which is fine. But
I'm not sure what anything I've been not asked. You know, there's been a lot of asked, but something that I would want people to know. I'm just, you know, having fun, you know, and I hope my goal is always to entertain. So even though I talk about, you know, there can be a lot of serious topics depending on what book you're picking up. Sometimes you'll pick up a book and it's just gore and fun and, you know, like the 1980s zombie flesh eater series. But some books like Palace of Ghosts or The Last Hellfighter, they take on more of a serious kind of tone. But no matter what, I want to be honest in what I write about and I want to have fun. And then of course, when you're having fun, that it kind of impregnates into the writing itself too, and then people who are reading it are hopefully also having fun.
That's excellent. That's excellent. I think that's an excellent note to end on. And Thomas, where can people get your books, find you, follow you, all that fun stuff? Tell us the whole kit and caboodle.
You can find pretty much everything I write on either paperback, audiobooks, or ebooks on Amazon. You can just search for Thomas S. Flowers on there to find them, or you can hop over to my website, www.thomasflowers.com. And on Twitter, you can find me at Thomas S. Flowers. And on Facebook, I think it's about the same thing. But I'm always trying to tweet and retweet and help support the horror community, but also having fun with cool zombie memes and horror memes and discussing the latest movies that are coming out, and of course the nice retro ones that we love to dig back up and discuss in different ways.
And I must say, you're a very generous soul. You're wonderful. You're a great human being. And again, thank you for your service. And you have a beautiful family. And I'm just happy for you, man.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, you're too kind. And you could find this show and more. I don't know. Yeah, more. Yeah. You need to write an article for Crash Palace one day. I'm gonna free reign. Do whatever you want. You send it to me. Just, you know, let me know.
Heck yeah, man.
All right, awesome. No, seriously, that'd be great. You could CrashPalaceProductions.com, and you could follow me at as Crash Palace on Twitter and all of that good stuff. And Thomas, thank you for coming on. This is great. So,
Well, thanks for having me.
that's excellent. Looking forward to hearing more about the new titles. Hope the new book continues to do well and grow, and hopefully this will show will help a little bit. That'll be
Oh,
cool.
absolutely. Yeah, looking forward to the release. It's been a fun ride so far.
Awesome, man. Well, keep riding.
There, always.
All right, man. Good night.
All right, bye.